Hi, you're listening to the TL Podcast. My name is Thomas Le Huang, and I am interviewing someone who seems ordinary, but who is achieving extraordinary things. That is the quest of this interview.
Oh, well, Jed, how are you going?
Good, mate. Good to see you again.
Great, Jed.
To catch up at the session the other day with the team talking about radical ownership.
They're still running around that subject. It's the fire is still going over here. So that's fantastic. You did a great session.
Yeah, no, it's a good group of people, mate. They're very eager to learn and very interactive. And when that happens, you know, you're working with some good people. So thanks for that opportunity, mate.
And mate, and what a great storyteller you are. You just took people through a roller coaster of emotion up, down, and then I love that end bit. I was thinking, man, we're gonna have to hand out tissues here because he's about to just land the plane.
Thank you for that. I've had some good mentors around, you know, obviously presenting and facilitating, and people love a story, mate. It's like you've probably done more training than I've ever done, and you've sat in more seminars, and you know, it's like death by PowerPoint a lot of the time. It's like, you know, point one, point two, point three, point four, and you know, generally the points you're familiar with already, so that makes it even harder to digest. So I've learned from my mentors to try and I'm trying to get better at it. I'm still got a long way to go, but just that, yeah. And you know, your book is that I've read is the story in itself. So you've got the gift of storytelling as well. So
Thanks, mate. All right, thanks. Let's get into a subject to start this, because I thought, you know what, Jed's got that psychological side to things, so why don't we just have a look at some of the issues that happen in real estate and start helping people for real there. And along the way, people will understand that, you know, I can actually accelerate my growth by just working with Jed on one-on-one, because that's the thing. You can either sit on the sideline and watch a coach running a session, or you can actually as a coach work on me, and you know, this is a taste for them. So today we're gonna just tackle the subject on the fear of prospecting, or call reluctance as they call it, right? So
yes,
I know that you've done a session before on this, but where can we start? Why do you think people got the fear, and is it wrong?
I think we can start with the importance that, you know, you don't build any great real estate business without building relationships. And the way you're building relationships is through communication, and the way you communicate is through connection. And so there's no other opportunities. It's directly, you know, person to person. It's a relationship business, not a transactional business, as they say, even though there's transactions that are taking place. So I think sometimes we've lost, or we've moved away with the essential nucleus of what it means to be successful in real estate. And we've got caught up in maybe tech and marketing and social media and, you know, how good our open homes are and how great our listing presentation is. And we forgot the essential thing that builds trust control, which is what we're after in the first place, is this one-to-one, this heart-to-heart, mind-to-mind, person-to-person. And, you know, once we bring that back into vogue almost and go, okay, hang on, the whole central aspect of my business is to connect with people. I think that sort of helps the difficulty around actually doing that, because the flip side is there's a lot of people in real estate who aren't successful. And if you track that to the reason why, it's because they're not connecting with people. They're not reaching out. They're not communicating. They're not building trust control. And so there's this big divide between people who are very successful and people who are not. So I think that's the first thing, the importance of connection and communication and being in contact with other humans. And it's a simple game, as you know. The more you do that, The more people you connect with, and the more people you have opportunities with, and the more possibilities that eventuate, and then over the years, it becomes a stronger business. I mean, you would see this in your business with your top agents. The ones at the top, they're still working, they're still putting in the effort. But if they've done it right, they've got a lot of referral business that comes to them, a lot of call-ins because they've built those connections over the years. Versus someone who's still struggling, might be making good money, but they're still struggling. They still don't have enough time. They're still running off their feet all the time. They don't have any balance or work-life sort of integration because they've set it up the wrong way. And so I think it's important to, I guess, put it in its place at the top of the how do you be successful in real estate, where you connect and you communicate with people. And today, talking about core reluctance, I think is, at the heart of how do we get better as agents? If we can sort of knock this off the shelf, this core reluctance, if we can get some skills and some ways to sort of understand it first and foremost, and then sort of apply it to the challenges that come with core reluctance, I think more agents will open up into better careers. So
Yeah.
I think we start.
Let me start by probably explaining what I see as a fear of prospecting, because I did have that. And I have to say that when I go into an office and try and help an office, I still have that for a few seconds now. But it's really the fear of rejection, but also the fear of embarrassment. It's a weird thing. I still remember having people rejecting me in my first few weeks in real estate, and they hang up on me. And because my colleague were watching, I kept on having conversation with an empty phone because I was too embarrassed to let them know that I got rejected, right? So, and those are the little programs that we start having and installing it within our own mind. And I think that that builds a much bigger thing. So I want people to really understand that it is okay to have that. You know, it's a normal thing. If you're doing 100, 150 calls a day, at some stage you're going to feel that. And if you don't have those kind of sweat, I don't think that you're really pushing. So the fear is a normal thing. And where does it come from? It's quite a few things. One, I don't know what it is, but everyone who gets into real estate, they expect that every single phone call they make is going to be a yes. And I think that they're doing the anti-Viktor Frankl principle, which is instead of looking for meaning for the future, they want something now. And because they don't have that something now, they start to lose faith. And now it hits them. And then they go down in the numbers. They die less big numbers, and they now forgotten that it's a numbers game, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I wrote an article a number of years ago, which is one of the top lead agent articles around how to beat core reluctance. And there was two authors, Goodson and Dudley, who brought out a book called The Psychology of Sales Core Reluctance. They spent 30 years researching it with over 500,000 people, and they sort of, in a nutshell, sort of described what core reluctance was. And they said this. They said it's the inability and fear of promoting yourself or making yourself visible. The inability and fear of promoting yourself and making yourself visible. So core reluctance is about not wanting to promote yourself or be visible, be seen by others. And if we think about the Australian culture in particular, the tall poppy syndrome, it's certainly not, it's almost frowned upon to sort of elevate yourself in any way, shape, or form, and put yourself out there in front of people first and foremost, not only to then have to go to complete strangers sometimes, or people you've just met or have a warm sort of connection with, and sort of put yourself out there as well from a promotion point of view. Or I like, the visibility, being visible. How do you be visible in the real estate industry where you've got to promote yourself? If you don't promote yourself through social media and you're just listers and you're solds and you get on the, ringing through your database and putting your signs up, I mean, you're never going to get known. It's a positioning business, real estate. And if you don't position yourself really well, it's hard to get the call-ins that you need to build a successful business. So the question, I guess, Thomas, is, what is this fear of promoting yourself and making yourself visible all about and being worried about that? And I think it comes down to a couple of things. It's that rejection you sort of talked about as well. But at the heart of it is the fear of being judged and not being accepted. At the heart of humanity, we want to be recognized. We want to be accepted. We want to be understood. We want to be loved. We don't want to be judged and misunderstood. We want to have people, welcome us, not push us away. And I think that fear, it hasn't come from real estate. It's been part of who we are as people.
Absolutely.
And so we go in, we bring that with us into real estate. And a point on what you said about your experience, the brain's predictive. So that experience, the next time you went to do that, the same thing would have happened because it's predicting what happened the last time, where you felt rejected and were worried. And so, being judged, not being liked, not being accepted, not being wanted, add to that all of our childhood dramas and trauma that we deal with as well. It's no wonder when we get into real estate, we almost get a shock. And Goodson and Dudley talk about, how do we get over that fear of promoting ourselves? How do we get
Let's not
over that?
talk. Let's not talk about that first. All right. So let's stay here so that if we can talk about this, then at least the person who's listening to this, I hope that they'll get that feeling of I'm not alone.
No, definitely not.
This is a normal thing. I'm in a great job. This is why it pays us so well, because this job is not only about self-therapy, but this job is going to make me stronger. And I see that number of salespeople I see, Jed, that really paralyzed. They're paralyzed by this fear. And so what they do is that they want to know everything first. They get into sidetrack. I need to know things first, and it makes it even worse, because now instead of having their self being triggered, now it's their ego being triggered, and every single phone call, everything is all about, oh man, if I'm not good enough, I'm going to be embarrassed, I'm going to be judged, the way you just said, and hence the fear of call reluctance. So all of those things are normal human nature, don't you find?
I think so. And the other thing that works sort of against us is the brain is about pleasure. It's not about pain. And so if you're going to do something like ring someone that you might know at all or might only know a little bit or just met at an open, or you're ringing them to actually share some information and then in turn ask for something, the brain that senses pain. The brain doesn't want to lean into that and go forward. But if you're going to not call that person and you're going to have a coffee instead, well, that's pleasurable. And so the brain, 9 times out of 10, is going to take the pleasure way rather than the painful way. And I think we need to sort of understand that game is consistently happening all the time. And we're sort of wired, and we have to work out, which some of these things we'll talk about today, we have to work out how do we unwire that sort of system. And one of the points that they make in the book, Psychology of Sales, Core Reluctance, is talking about rewards. You get a reward if you get a sale. There's a monetary reward, and you get a there's a altruistic reward from helping people as well. But to get there, you have to go through a lot of disappointment potentially, and sometimes a lot of rejection, and not calling or not getting on the phone and reaching out to people is in a sense of a reward as well, because what the reward is that I don't have to keep ringing people. I don't have to get rejected. And so it's sort of flipped the wrong way. The reward that we want to seek is the big reward that we're getting from being a great agent and being supportive, having great customer service and helping people do the big deal with the dream of their life. And watching that happen and then get remunerated accordingly, that's the core reward. But what we've done is we've flipped it around to not making the call. Procrastinating is actually the reward that we get. And that can become addictive as well, because it not only stops us, makes us feel safe, and it stops us from having to lean in and put ourselves in a predictive, scary sort of situation where we have to reach out and try and call people. So I found that really interesting in their research as well, because that sort of keeps us stuck and oscillating.
You're so right about all this. A salesperson sometimes will do so much less for $23,000 commission. But once I got a younger salesperson to just make phone calls, and every time that he would connect with someone, whether they say yes or no, I'd pay him a dollar. However, he had to forfeit whatever listing we might get out of that. And do you know that he worked way, way harder for that $1 per connection than seeing the $30,000 or $40,000 he could make by just getting a listing and selling it?
Well, he saw some value in it. There was some reward in it. And so I guess the point is we get rewards out of everything, good and bad, and it's about trying to push through. The other thing is, let me just share my screen here, Thomas, which is really, really interesting. Can you see that there? The other thing, just, this isn't a neuroscience conversation. I'm certainly not in that league, but it's great to sort of understand how the brain sort of works. And the way it is it's a fight flight response that we need to understand when it comes to call reluctance. Because what happens is with the brain and how it works is we might see a tiger or a lion or a spider, and that goes through our senses to a thing called the thalamus, which is like an air traffic controller. It takes the information in and goes, where am I going to send it now? And when stuff is fearful, it sends it straight to the limbic system, straight to the amygdala, which is the fight flight response. And so if you think about it, the potential that I have to call someone, I take through my senses, and it makes me scared. I get worried. I don't want to do it. I want to procrastinate. And that's the thalamus being hijacked and the amygdala taking over straight away and getting into fight flight. I'm either really resistant to it, or I run away from it. Rather than that information coming in, going into the thalamus, which says, yeah, this is safe. We're just going to call a few people. Everything's going to be all right. There's going to be no dramas. We might have a win at the end. I'll send that through to the neocortex and it'll get processed and we'll get on with our call sessions. And so this is happening all the time. One of two things. We're either seeing the phone and we're going, oh my God, it's a spider, it's a snake, I don't want to call. And we get hijacked, so we go into fight, flight or freeze mode, or we see the phone and we go, oh yeah, just got to call a couple of people. I might be able to help someone out today. This is going to help grow my family and help me reach my dreams and help them do the same. And it gets translated into something that is good. This process, Thomas, is happening all the time. And if we understand it, then we can manage it. So if I understand that when I'm going to be in a call session and I'm gonna have a hard call to make, or I feel like it's going to be really difficult, or I'm not feeling as confident as I need to be, then I know I go into fight flight. I get a bit of overwhelmed, and that fight flight response is resistant to doing the calls. However, if I don't go into that mode and everything processes as normal and it's just calls I need to make, I'm helping some people, I help my own family, I'm helping the business that I'm working for, that's a far better way. And so what happens is, when the hijack happens in the amygdala, there's 6 seconds of time that you have before it dissipates. And in that 6 seconds is what you need to be aware of to get through this challenge that you're facing. So you see the phone, you freak out, you go, oh man, I got to call that person. You see the name on the list, you run through the list, you find the easiest calls. You know, I got to call that person, or I got to have a hard conversation about the vendor marketing and et cetera. And the amygdala gets hijacked. It puts chemicals through your body. You shut down. You sort of avoid it. Go and get a coffee and avoid it. What happens? There's only 6 seconds where you get out of sort of whack, if we look at it like that way. So if you wait 6 seconds, it'll dissipate, and then you can go back into your normal mind and reassess the situation and face it in a different way, if that sort of makes sense. What we normally do is we react, the amygdala gets hijacked, we go into fight flight, and we keep reacting rather than waiting 6 seconds, breathing, and then just allowing it to sort of dissipate and then sort of revisiting the situation or the call that we need to make or what needs to happen. And I think understanding that process helps us control it physiologically and mentally a lot more efficiently. Because now we know why. Oh, I'm freaking out. I don't want to call that person. I'm actually avoiding it. Well, I'm in fight flight. How do I get out of fight flight? Just wait 6 seconds, let it dissipate, and then come back to them and go, it's not going to make you fall in love with the call and the call session you're going to have to do the next half an hour, but at least you're now in a neutral position to reassess it again. And you
So
might go through that process a couple of times.
but what would you say to people who tried your 6 seconds trick and it doesn't work out? Do you...
It's like anything. It's like building a muscle, Thomas. You've got to condition it. You know, I was a, you know my backstory, you know, ex-heroin addict criminal. I was a violent person. So how does a violent person whose amygdala was getting hijacked all the time, going into fight flight all the time, just in an instant, sensory information would come in. My thalamus, my air traffic controller would go, danger, 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 send it straight to the amygdala. The amygdala would lash out and fight. It would never get through to the cortex and never get processed in a mature, adult, you know, society aligned type of way. So how did that change? Well, it changed over time of me understanding that when I'm in fight flight and my amygdala is getting hijacked, I need to wait 6 seconds and I need to breathe and then reassess the situation. And over time, not instantaneously, I grew the ability to, you know, I think under any type of pressure or crisis, I'm quite calmer now. Any overwhelm or any situation where there's that fight flight that gets initiated and triggered, I in my mind understand what's going on now, and I understand that I have the tools to sort of, I guess, react in a different way now because it's going to subside. And I'm going to come back to my equilibrium or my equipoise or my neutrality or my alignment. And I'm going to be able to make a better decision from there. Whereas in the past, it was just a total hijack, fight, flight, reactive, and then clean up the damage later. Now, charged, activated, triggered, fight, flight, couple of seconds. I know what's going on. I know why it's happening. Settle that down, let the 6 seconds disperse, come back to the situation and try again. So it's a conditioning process. But I think knowing it, Thomas, is really important. I
Yes,
mean,
knowing,
a lot of this is aware, a lot of what we're talking about is awareness. It's understanding why we do something. So if an agent understands why they're not calling, why they procrastinate, why they avoid stuff, why they go into fight flight, they're further down the line in beating it than they are not understanding what's going on in their world at that given time. So very, very powerful.
What I'm trying to also say is that after the 6 seconds, there's no point walking around their mind with dirty boots because they're going to go back there. So
Yeah, of course. And
if you're fueling it, well, they're
they'll
going to
repeat it
do.
again. Yeah, they'll repeat it again. So that's exactly right.
There's a line that I heard lately.
But if you know it, you can intercept it. And that's the difference. With not knowing it, you just keep repeating the process. Keep topping up to turn the 6 seconds on again, more another six, another six, another six, another six. So half an hour goes past and Johnny says, hey, you want to get a ca coffee out the back? And you go, yeah, all right. And then you disconnect from the whole thing and you come back to it again later. So
One of my favorite lines that I heard from Tom Cruise in an interview recently is that he said, yeah, he's afraid when he does some of those stunts, but he says to himself, I'm not afraid to be afraid. And I thought, you know what? That is smart because I've spent a lot of my life saying, oh, I'm not afraid of doing this. And the energy that I had to put into my mind to go against that is huge. But I tried that line on me where I actually embraced being afraid. Suddenly now there's nothing wrong with being afraid.
No.
You know, and suddenly now I'm going, I'm not afraid of being afraid. And somewhere in my mind, I felt it. It
Yeah.
got scrambled. It got scrambled. Hold on. Should
Yeah,
I be afraid or should I not? You know? And I thought, you know, that was a good line.
it's definitely because fear is just a physiological response. If you've ever been skydiving, stood on the edge of a cliff, or you know, been in a situation where your body's gone into fight flight straight away, it's there to tell you something. Fortunately enough, we can override it when it comes to things like you know, core reluctance. We can understand why it's happening and what's going on and why it makes us behave in a particular way or avoid or deny or resist calling. We understand why it happens and we can override it now. But fear in itself is just an indication. It's just a flag. It's a message to us to tell us that something's happening. So it's healthy in many ways. As far as making more calls, we need to understand, and this is why I'm big on self-awareness with my coaching with agents. If they understand themselves and how they respond and react to things, they're in a better position to override them, change them, manage them, or mitigate them as they go through. So
That's good.
I guess there's a framework, Thomas, which is what I'm trying to get at, that, how our fight flight impacts on core reluctance, how the pleasure pain principle impacts how our beliefs around, not being accepted and not, being liked and worried about what people think plays a role in why we have that core reluctance to start with. And I think, being aware of that is half getting us halfway there to working it in a far better way.
I mean, you can only deal with the thieves that you've caught, right? You can't deal with a thief you can't catch.
Yeah, that's right. And
Self-awareness is so important. Absolutely right.
so, knowledge is power, but knowledge applied is even more powerful. And so, people watching this, the next time you resist something, the next time you go into overwhelm, the next time you sort of shut down, the next time you avoid something, you understand that it's potentially your amygdala that's been hijacked and you're in fight and flight now. You're trying to deal with this situation. If you just be patient and sort of wait and get back to calm, you can reassess the situation. And over time, that becomes easier and becomes more powerful, I think, when you're applying it to calls that you need to do.
Yes. One of the things that I also notice when it comes to conquering your fear is to do that in the group. It's somewhere, maybe a limbic system, as you spoke about, maybe it gets calmed down when we in a herd, and
Well, there's I've got about 8 points here that I was going to roll out today
okay, man,
that sort of fit in
we're
with.
here to roll out 20 points. We're here to give them 20. So
Well, I've
take
got
it
eight. Well, you
away.
got 12. I've got eight. You've got 12.
No, I was urging you to come up with 12. So you know,
Team.
so we've already said a few. We've already said a few. So you said about self-awareness, right?
Yeah,
You said about
self-awareness is important.
six seconds of the limbic system, right?
Where when you get a fight flight response and the amygdala gets hijacked, you've got 6 seconds to let it pass.
So we
So
said a
that's
few
important.
already. So what's the next one?
Understand that your brain wants pleasure. It
Yes.
doesn't want pain, and so you have
Yes.
to override that when you're going to do the calls.
Yeah.
And understand what's happening behind the scenes, I guess, when you're not calling and you're fearful, fear of failing. You be accepted. You want to be liked. I mean, that's a death to the ego type conversation as well. Understanding that you're human and you want to be recognized and you don't want to be rejected. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that as well.
Yeah.
But the team thing is really important as far as, positivity is contagious. Motivation is contagious. Depression is contagious. Like being around someone that is negative, that's contagious. And so team calling sessions are, powerful. I've worked with many offices that have incorporated team calling and, improved their listing appraisal rate by 50%. The problem is I don't think we do it enough. As offices or businesses, but that camaraderie that comes from it, that opportunity to sort of be supported, but at the same time potentially fail safely, is really important. And getting other people doing the same thing all at once is a crowd think. It's that mob mentality. People are more likely to lean in and lean out because it's stimulating our dopamine, it's stimulating our endorphins, it's getting the good hormones working in our body that's going to help us lean into, making those calls as well. And I think when it gets down to calls, there's a couple of things that are important. Some of the problems, practically, why core reluctance happens is agents don't know what to say. And so they might have, all guns blazing, we're going to do a call session, but they don't really have an idea of what to say, and they're not sort of prepared. They don't know who, they don't know what, and they don't know why. And I think that's really important because if you've got some sort of anxiety about talking to someone already, and then you're not confidently, critically aware about exactly what you're going to say, why you're calling, what you want to achieve out of it, and who you're calling, now you're adding another level of anxiety to the situation. But if
Yes.
you know who you're calling, why you're calling them, what about them, what the outcome is you're trying to get out of that call, and you're critically clear about that. That gives you a level of confidence in being able to do that. So, what to
Yes.
say? I remember I trained a guy that was top number one in one of the brands in Australia. I went into his call session every morning. He did this without fail, and his routine was sit at his desk with his phone. His assistant would give him a pile of numbers that was printed out from his CRM system, and he would go through each one. He would make a note after each call on the bit of paper that he was given. He'd do about 80 calls from those bits of paper. He'd hand that back to his assistant. They'd populate the data in the CRM system, and then he'd go out and he'd do his appraisals and his listing presentations. He knew exactly who was calling, what he was calling about, what he had to say, what the outcome was, what the follow-up would be. He was zoned right in so that it was no confusion about, what he had to talk about. And I think that's really important in mitigating the anxiety around call reluctance.
Yeah.
Understanding that. That's about preparation.
But
It's
I think that there might be something else in there, Jet. Do you know when you have your assistant handing you 80 cards, you don't want it to return it back to the
Yeah,
assistant.
79, not done.
Right? So there's another
How
fear.
many did you ring? I rung one. Here's my papers.
And sometimes what I'm trying to say is that in that case, maybe it's a bigger fear, but we need to compare it to a bigger fear. Back in my days, sure, I had the fear of making a phone call because nobody likes to be rejected, not to feel that love, not or to feel judged. But I had a bigger fear, the fear of going broke. I mean, back in those days, I had some financial issues that I had a reason to go to work. And so every single time that I had the opportunity to prospect, it was like, this is my way out of my issue. I'd rather confront this than what's coming. And that was
That makes
fantastic.
sense.
And I understood very quickly, just have a bigger fear. You want to learn to run fast? Mate, set a tiger behind you. You'll see how fast you're going
Or increase your reward ahead of you as well,
to
and understand, why you're doing that, which I think is, part of being prepared. It's part of dialing into why you're doing what you're doing. Why is it important? Who are you doing it for? I always used to say sometimes when some of my clients didn't do their calls and we were having a conversation about it, and they're family people. And I would ask them, how does it feel to be taking food out of your kids' mouths? A very blunt, direct, sort of challenging question, to try and shock them into seeing that, hang on a second, this is bigger than just their success and what they're doing. This has an impact around everybody around them. And that dialing into the reward around what you're actually doing and why you're actually doing it,
Yes.
can be, motivating and can push you through and keep push you forward. So knowing what you say, being prepared, getting deliberate about that, lessens the anxiety and gives you some certainty and some focus.
Yeah.
Understanding that what the reward is really important, like we talked about, and having a critical, clear goal around the wins along the way, what they look like. And the rewards at the end of the day, what they look like as
Yeah.
well, really important. Team calls we've talked about. The other thing is reframing, getting your mind to switch. I was reading a David Goggins article the other day, and he has when he's doing his ultra marathons and his mind starts telling him negative stuff, he has what he calls the cookie jar. And the cookie jar is a whole raft of experiences where he's won and done amazing things and incredible things. So when his mind starts going crazy and saying, you're stupid for doing this, you're never going to make 150 kilometers in a day, blah, 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 he says he reaches into the cookie jar and he pulls out when he made seals for the fifth time, or he pulls out a memory when he. And I like that analogy. It's a really, really good practical one to go, what can you fill your cookie jar with? great experiences that you've had, so that when that, resistance maybe to calling comes, you can reach into the cookie jar and pull out a win that you have. Because what that's doing, Thomas, is changing your state. And, which leads to my next point, around state. You're either full of great hormones, which are making you feel fantastic, or you're dragging your ass through the snow, one or the other. And we have a say in that. We can decide how we feel a lot of the time. And the difference between feeling bad about having to make calls, feeling anxious, feeling afraid, not believing in ourselves, not feeling confident, that feeling versus doing 20 push-ups and 20 jumping jacks and releasing some endorphins are two different worlds. And so part of, I think, prepping for your calls is getting into a state. It's doing 20 jumping jacks. Do 50 if you need to. Do 10 push-ups. Run on the spot. Change the state of your physiology, because as soon as you start worrying about who you got to call and why you're calling them, and running through the fear sort of gamut, your body's sort of almost shutting down, tensing up, and overwhelm setting in, and you can't do much in that sort of state. And so, Tony Robbins talks about getting into state a lot and how impactful it is in executing and implementing, which is, at the end of the day, making calls is the biggest thing you need to do as an agent, and that's just about implementation.
Yes,
He who
you
calls
actually
wins.
brought something that I thought very important that I do not even do that with myself all the time, is that point of reaching into that cookie jar. I think that w most of us are very quick to self-criticize, but not to self-love.
No, for sure.
And when you just made the point, he went back and thought about when he became Navy SEALs or for the fifth time. Such a good point is that, why don't we just give ourselves a pat on the back before we start something tough? Why do we have to just put ourselves down?
Well, it's cognitive behavior therapy 101. It's like, you reframe the thinking patterns that you have. And again, without laboring on my story, the reason I'm sitting here today is because I changed the way I think. And I changed the way I think by continuously ad nausea, year after year, day after day, second after second, reframing the way I thought. I'm not useless. I'm not hopeless. I'm not going to amount to anything. Two, I am empowering. I am good. I am lovable. I am. And that just was a constant, continuous thing for about 15 years, to erase the old th thought patterns, to erase the old, I guess, self-identity. That's brought me to the person that I am today. And, when I go into a dark place, or when my fight flight, happens, or where I'm feeling self-conscious and not certain, the thing that gets me through is that cognitive behavior therapy. It's that reframing my thoughts, reframing my physiology and what I'm thinking about it, and changing it into something like a cookie jar, where I reach in and I go, "Oh, remember that time I took 10 people to Base Camp Everest?" Or, "Remember that time I did that charity?" And all of the good things about my life that have helped myself, my family, and people around me, which then elevate my thinking, which then bring me to a different place physiologically, and mentally, and then help me push on and push through. So the state and the reframe is really probably one of the most powerful things. And that comes back to, why are you calling? It's like, I don't want to call today to, I'm going to help change somebody's life. You consistently do that type of reframe, that's a powerful reframe.
One and so which brings me to your my next point, which is I think that you need to really work with a mentor. And someone like you who's seen what a dark place is, because you've now seen a much lighter, a brighter place, you now can take people who didn't know the difference between the two, but thought that the dark place wasn't the norm, the reality. And I think it's so important that we save ourselves a lot of life and therefore a lot of money by just working with a mentor, someone who's going to propel you by taking you through what they have experienced and how they have experienced that. And that's why I loved you when I did your first podcast, because I thought Man, I thought I had it tough. That was nothing. I did not wake up at the age of 17, chained up to a hospital bed, because the police are about to throw me in the jail. And this dude, he's now doing this, and he's empowering people. What are we talking about? So I think that people who are starting a career in real estate need to really understand. I need to invest in myself. I need to get all of those cobwebs out of my life so that I can start full throttle, not with that weight behind me, you know?
And I agree totally. There's a book called Take the Stairs by Rory Vader, a New York Times bestseller. And he talked about a thing called diminished intention. And he said, if you're going to do your calls, do them as early as you can in the day. I mean, obviously, the practicalities around that, different areas, different time zones, all that sort of stuff. But he said the reason is because your intention is higher in the mornings than it is in the afternoon. And so your intention drives behavior. And I think this is a great point. And if you're going to do your calls and commit to them, get them done as early as you can because your intention to do the calls is higher. After lunch, your intention wanes a little bit. By the time you get to the end of the day, the last thing you generally want to do is go through 20, 30 calls. So I thought that's a very good practical sort of point as well. And the other thing is, and I'll just add some from a practicality point of view, is that there's this thing that says do the hard things first, which I think has its place. But I think in regards to overcoming procrastination around calling, I always encourage my clients to do the easy calls first because the easy calls is like, the old cars where you used to have to pull the choke out and you used to have to push the accelerator and it primed the car and otherwise it wouldn't start. My dad had one and his dad had one. And so without priming the car, it wouldn't start. Sometimes, coaches and people encourage, agents to go and do the hard stuff first. And I think we've got to flip it around. I think if you do a few easy calls first, you've primed the car. The car's going to start easy. You get a bit of confidence. You might have a couple of wins. You get oiled and ready for the harder calls that are going to come down the track. You don't do 3 hours of easy calls and then try and do a hard call. But I think the principle is that priming of the car, getting some fuel into the carburetor so that when you turn the ignition on, it'll spark and it'll start and do what you want it to do. So easy calls first, build confidence, to do the harder calls later.
I like it, and I like it. You're precise, not doing it for 3 hours, because some people might say, "Hold on, Jed Xavier told me that I should only do the things I like, the easy stuff all day."
If you turn up to a call session and you know why you're doing it, you know who you're talking to and what it's all about, you know what your rewards are, you know the big picture in this. If you're critically prepared, if you got your head in the game, if you do some exercises to get your physiologically sort of, chemically induced motivation happening, and you start some easy calls, you do it in the morning, it's going to, revolutionize your business. And then that becomes a process of refining as you go along. But I think without these things, a cold start, not understanding how your mind works, not understanding the fight or flight response, I think it makes it hard. And a lot of agents out there don't understand this stuff, but hopefully through today and listening to this and watching, they will get a few things that they can apply to their own challenges around making calls more consistently, because that's where the money is made and the dreams are.
Now, mine is about gambling. So I think we need to put a wager on our activity. Back in my
We
day,
need to put a wager.
I didn't have enough. I didn't have enough, really. I had to make money. And so one of the best thing for me was to have a bet with a teammate that whoever had the least number of appointments by the end of the week would have to shout lunch to the other dude. And the teammate I picked, mate, shouting him lunch was like paying for dinner for two, you know? So I knew straight away there was no way I was going to lose this. And we used to go door knocking together. And I understood one rule in real estate: if you speak to more people, you have to have a higher odds of winning. And so I used to just make sure I door knock twice as many doors as he would. And But man, sometimes I would lose, and the loss was so painful. Watching this guy having a laugh and eat my dinner for the next following 3 nights, that was so painful. And that was something that really helped me too.
Well, that's sort of gamifying the process, and particularly in team sessions, you can gamify the process, giving away stuff, and having a board and leaderboard and that type of stuff as well. That sometimes works and gets people motivated, or make a commitment to someone else, have a bet with someone else. That's sort of we like to play games, and particularly if there's a win-loss scenario, we like that even better. So it's definitely
Come
one
on,
of
mate. We are nation. We're the only nation on the planet I know that stops
for a
for
horse
just to
race.
watch horses win, man.
Yeah.
Another one that really was very powerful for me was to make a promise to my loved ones. So
Yeah.
I used to just get a board and on the fridge, and with my two young children back in those days, I've got four now, and I'd say to them, "We're gonna go to Belgium and visit our family in July." All right, so this is January. And every day that you do something outside your normal chores, you get a star, and that will take you to Belgium when you get 100. And in the beginning, it was like, I look good, I look cool, the kids love me. But after a week, because at the end of each week, we'd sit down and count the stars, and if they get 10, we put a much bigger star. And now I'm thinking, mate, they 10, they 90 from the target,
Yeah.
and straight away it got me to go to work because there was no way I was going to let them down.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like what we talked about at the session the other day with the team about the radical ownership and keeping your promise,
Yeah,
making your
I
promise.
like that promise. I like that game. I like that game. But don't say it here because I think people need to experience life.
Yeah, well, I think that's important though. Our word is our word, and we make a promise to ourselves and those around us. I think that's an important part of, who we are and who we become. So.
Yeah. Another way for me for us to re-overcome the fear of cold reluctance is to change the way we think about a position. A lot of salespeople start real estate and somehow they think they're out there to beg for a listing. You have to see yourself as a wealth builder. You're here to help somebody else build their wealth. You're not here to be a nuisance. You're here, you're a magician. You've got the ability to change people's life.
That's part of the reframe, isn't it? It's why
Yeah.
you're here, why are you doing what you're doing?
And if you can't think of yourself that way, then get out of real estate because why would you want to do a job and think that the job is a bad job?
That's right. That's right. And a lot of people do that. So the emphasis is on, why are you doing what you're doing? What's the outcomes you're looking for? What impact are you trying to make? Who are you trying to influence? When you look back in 20, 30 years, what would you have wanted to happen the most out of your career? And I think that gets back to why you're doing what you're doing, and having that in front of you every day, as part of the motivation. I mean, it's many things make the whole that keep us on track. It's particularly around doing the basics on calling for sure.
Yeah, I think also having variety, Jet, maybe. Like a lot of people, all they do is they hit the phone and it's cold. It's like if you're gonna go and be spat at or sworn at or getting bricks thrown at you all day long, for sure, at some stage you're gonna just go, "Hey, listen, I don't need this anymore." But you have to have variety. Do a little bit of that, do a little bit of something you like and mix it all up and then change again.
You can't be doing it. Well, there's aspects of real estate that can get you tired and drag you out. And you can't be doing that, 24/7, 7 days a week, every day of the year. You have to have some sort of work-life integration to sort of break it up as well. And even your prospecting, where you prospect from. Sometimes you prospect in the car, sometimes you prospect in the office, sometimes you prospect at a park, maybe you prospect at a cafe. I think that's important around the variety thing as well, because it just sort of keeps it fresh. But if you know why you're doing it, you know who you're calling, what you're calling about, you've got all that sort of, done, you're reframing, you're really focused, you understand the process, you've got to inject a little bit of fun into it yourself. And I think, I work from home, and so sometimes I get stir crazy. So the travel, it breaks it up. If I didn't do the travel, I wouldn't come back fresh, and wasn't fresh, then I wouldn't make the most of working from home. And so the two work into one and make it more effective, I think. So I'll put that article. Well, I'll give you the link, and you can put the article on this as well if people want a deeper sort of read.
There's another one that I have used that really works, is you have to celebrate your success. That's a one thing that people don't do. That people like me who likes to be hard on myself, I believe that people should really say to themselves, I'm going to be prospecting or making these calls for 50 minutes. When I get to 20, so that's a goal, I will give myself 10 minutes of doing whatever I want to do. If I want to go onto Facebook, I go to Facebook. If I want to go have ice cream, go and have an ice cream. And I think they need to do that. I find myself, even if I start the day like full of energy and being positive, mate, after 2 or 3 hours of sitting on a chair and doing nothing else but making the calls, I'm starting to feel negative. I start to think negative because I'm not moving, right?
But that's all about your planning and your preparation, isn't it? It's all about going, okay, I'm going to do half an hour, then I'm going for a walk around the block, I'm going to get a coffee, I'm going to, I mean, that's part of your prep in how you get the best out of you when you're doing your calls. And celebrating your wins along the way is better, they're saying now, than waiting for the big outcome down the track of getting maybe the GCI you wanted over the year. See, some people just focus on the GCI over the year, and it's arduous throughout the year to get there, rather than celebrating the small wins on the way, which gives us hits of dopamine, which gives us a reward, which motivates us even more to do even better in regards to the small things along the way that are going to get us the big thing at the end of the day. So that's been a little bit of a shift in psychology around that as well, rather than going, well, the outcome is the big thing that I'm waiting for, but I just feel shit all the way along the way doing the hard stuff to get there. And that's why most people don't get there, because they can't do that, rather than going, I'm going to celebrate my wins. This is how I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to have my breaks. This is what I'm going to do to make me the best version I can be. This is how I'm going to engage in the fun aspect of it. That's where I'm heading. That's the big goal. But along the way, I've got to celebrate the wins and have small rewards to keep me elevated and motivated as much as I can, so I can actually actualize what I'm trying to achieve for the big outcome. You bang on there. It's totally right.
Another way, probably, that this time it's more for leaders, business owners. I truly believe that they have a very small window when someone starts around them to install a lot of feel-good feelings, emotions. I see leaders or business owners spending too much time in telling their recruits new lines, better lines, or you shouldn't have said that, or you should, and they don't get it, right? You're imprinting in these brand new people all the fears, and afterwards you expect them to be a gladiator. It's not possible. When I employ someone, the first few weeks of their career, I don't care what they do. I don't care where they stuff up. I don't care that they say the wrong line. I laugh with them. I mean, 20 years ago, when I had a person being rejected on the phone for the first time, I used to stand up, go and give them a five. I'd say, now you're no longer a virgin. You've been rejected. And we sort of like have a laugh together, because I'm going to scramble your head with only positive energy on anything that you're getting back. So
And that's important, because when they go to do it again the next time, they're either going to have that experience, or
yes.
they're going to have the predictive experience that they sucked and that they didn't do a good job, and then it wasn't fun, and that this isn't happiness, and they're going to follow that imprinting along rather than you breaking it. It's breaking their state. And I think that's really important, because their experiences at the front end of their journey is going to predict how they respond or how they experience the middle and the back end of their journey. And so if we can make it, not too serious, but professional and fun at the same time, I think that's a good thing. And psychology supports that. It supports that predictiveness, because they're going to come back to that office, back to those smells, back to the sounds and sights, and they're going to see the phone, and they're going to have an experience where they just felt miserable for 5 days, or whether they felt a little bit miserable for 5 days, but they laughed more than they cried. And that's important for setting them up for success, I think. So you bang on there.
Yeah. The other bit is another technique is to understand the rules of the game. If I wanted to become a Formula One driver, I need to accept speed, right? If I was to go into a Formula One team and tell people, listen, I don't like speed. I want to drive slowly. I want to make sure I bring home the car in time. I wouldn't be hired. So every game, every profession's got requirements. In real estate, the requirement is a large number of no will lead you to a yes. You have to go through them, right? And if I was to give you 1,000 jars and ask you to lift the lid and have a look, because one of the jars will have $10,000, mate, people will do it all day long. But to pick up the phone and be rejected 99 times in order to get that one yes, or 50 times in order to get that one yes, they focus on the 49 no's they're gonna get. It's weird. It's weird.
I agree, and I think it, to your point about leadership and onboarding, and that experience at the front end is really important, where leaders can play a more critical role in the experience that they have. I know some organizations just throw you in for 3 months, and if you swim, you swim, and away you go, and that's a model that works for them, and then others just sort of don't provide any support, and others over support. And so you got to find what's right for your people. But I think that involvement around making the experience a good experience, despite the fact that it is challenging, I think more younger agents that join the industry are going to last, I reckon.
Yeah. I'm going back to celebrating success, but it's a tip. My son, he's a lawyer now and he's a brilliant lawyer. And when he first started his first year, I said to him, listen, you're going to have to learn to speak to people. And so I think you're going to have to do a lot of phone prospecting for a client of mine because he will teach you how to talk. And after a few days, he started to hit it. And the first time he got 3 listing appointments in a day, my mate said to him, go home. And Alexander would look at his watch, he'd be going, but hold on, it's 11:30. I've got a few more hours, I'm going to keep on doing something. And he said, no, if you're here in the next 5 minutes, I'll kick you out. Go home, you've got your 3 appointments, you deserve it. And the kid suddenly started to think, hold on, how do I get 3 before 11? Because this is crazy. This guy is gonna, and he said to me, Dad, I can't believe it. He's paying me for the whole day and he's sending me home at 11:30. And
Interesting.
this kid had more days finishing before noon than anybody else I know.
Interesting. Well, that's a leader working out the best for their talents and to get the best out of them at the end of the day. Yeah, I love
Yeah.
that.
And one of my final things about that leadership thing is that a leader must know that and must accept that what works for them is not necessarily what's going to work for this person. Right? Because as you said it to me many times already, some people are drawn to reward, some because pleasure, and some people they push by the fear of pain, you know? And so you have to find out who you're working with in order to just give them the right potion.
Well, leadership is, how you get around your team and how you understand your team and how you know your team, first and foremost, as opposed to just another number in the team doing something that thinks important for the team. Big difference, yeah. Big difference.
All right. So we're coming to the end of our session here. What would be your top three for someone who's just starting, Jet?
I think, like I said at the start, understand what you're going to experience. So understand you're going to get into this fight flight response a lot because you're going to get fearful, you're going to get worried, you're going to get anxiety, you're going to get overwhelmed, you're going to doubt, you're going to worry. So understand why that's happening, the psychology behind that, which is pretty simple. I'm not a psychologist, and I sort of whipped it out in about 5 minutes, and we got a basic understanding about, oh, okay. So when I get tense and anxious and worried and concerned and scared and, don't want to do something, then I'm having a response to my amygdala, getting hijacked, and I'm in fight flight response. So I think understanding how we operate is really important. I think that's really key. I think the power of the reframe is the next one, because the chatter is the biggest enemy that we have. And understanding that, if we can allow that to happen, the negative chatter, then we can certainly implement and input positive chatter, or whatever it is that we need to reframe the situation as well. I think that's number two. And I think the last one is the prep. It's not just turning up and just going through the motions. It's really being deliberate in how you call, who you call, what you're calling about. It's being really a specialist rather than just another call where you're sort of making it up, or you just said the last things to the last person. It's really specifics around what you're trying to achieve and clarity around that. I think they're really the important things that I've come up from our conversation today, Thomas.
Okay, you're a very humble man. I would probably end by saying that if you want to really be successful at this and overcome it, you have to work with a coach.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
I truly believe that. You look at Nadal, who just been shown his retirement show about 2 days ago in France. He has a coach. The guy's won so many Grand Slam and he still has a coach. You look at people who are at the top of their game. Is there a clue that those guys got a coach? I mean, I've spoken to you a few times. I've had a few lunches with you where I'm going, I walked away and I'm thinking, man, he's pushing the button. He's asking the question. He's making you a bit uncomfortable because that's beyond your comfort zone. That's when you start winning,
That's right.
And I
And
think you do that
coaches,
well.
and coaches have, thank you. And coaches have coaches too. I have coaches, so it goes without saying. So thank you for that.
All
Definitely.
right. Mate, I thank you very much for today. And I think that we've given them more than 20. So not three,
There you
20.
go. We achieved. Yeah, we achieved our goal. But I'll give you the link
Yes,
for
we'll put it on.
the article. I'll put it in the chat box now, so you've got it, and you can find it in there. Where is the
No,
chat box?
we'll put it on for you, mate. Don't worry.
Hang on, just let me zip it in there. There it is there. That's in your chat box, mate. So you
Okay.
can take that, share it with your team and other people on the podcast. And yeah, let's do this again.
Jed, thanks so much for today. Talk to you soon, man.
All right, mate. Cheers.
Thank you.